Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, you guys, tell me you don't love that straight up porn star intro every week. Thanks for joining me on Queensbury Rules Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensburyRules.com, and James Foley is not going to be able to make it today. He's off watching Friday Night Fights, I believe. I think he's catching up with that thing. You know, our recurring joke every week that I have to pound into the ground. I'll do it every day. I don't care. Thanks for joining us anyway. There hasn't been a ton of boxing on lately, which kind of sucks. We got a little bit spoiled there at the end of 2013. We kind of just got good cards and good fights thrown at us left and right, which, believe me, I don't think anybody's really complaining about. However, now that we've gone a few weeks without a whole lot of boxing, it feels really, really bare, really barren in the boxing landscape right now, which sucks. But we'll have to deal with it because we got some stuff going on anyway. Coming up in the next few weeks, there should be a couple of at least decent fights. But the big fight this coming weekend is going to be Jean Pascal versus Lucien Boutte. Should be a fun one. Needless to say, it's a pretty big fight up there in Canada. I think that it's probably flown a little bit under the radar of your average American fan. And that's not to say anything bad about either of those fighters. One of the issues that I see is that they've both been very inactive. So that kind of makes it a little bit difficult, being that the American audiences haven't seen a whole ton of either of those guys lately. That makes it tough for American audiences to really catch on, I think. However, that's just kind of the state of boxing. That's not necessarily anything about either of those guys in particular. It's pretty much just become customary for guys to fight once or twice a year if they're on that bigger name level. That's just how it is. However, before we get into that, I just wanted to quickly recap this past week's Friday night fights. I'll probably be able to spend actually a couple minutes on it now that Foley's not here because he's, well, I don't know. He takes up a couple seconds of time saying he didn't watch it. That's true. No. Anyway, this last week on Friday Night Fights wasn't exactly a great week for Friday Night Fights. I mean, you know, I spend pretty much week in and week out defending the show. It's tough for me, you know, to really defend it when we get the stuff that we do in the first 2 weeks of 2014. You know, the first week, it featured a fight in Rancis Barthelemy versus Argenis Mendez that on paper really seemed to be, seemed like it could be a good fight. And it kind of wound up being a bit of a bust, at least in terms of, well, I mean, it was explosive and it ended quickly, but there seemed to be a kind of crappy call made about the KO. It came after the bell. A lot of people seemed to plainly see that it came after the bell, and that kind of left a bad taste in our mouth as far as Friday Night Fights goes, which, you know, that sucks. That just opens up, kind of starts the season out on a bad foot, and I think Teddy Atlas was particularly upset because of that happening. You know, it's tough to, for a guy in his position, especially when, you know, think or say what you want about Teddy Atlas, and I certainly do, because he can be annoying and overbearing. But at the same time, he really is something of a champion for the rights of fighters and the right things happening in boxing. He's kind of ridiculous about it sometimes and rants a bit much, as do I. But I think he really does have the best interest of the sport in mind, and I respect that. And I think that I could see why he could get so upset on that first show, you know, wanting to start the year out well and have it end like that and kind of seemingly have a blown call in there. That sucks. So, yeah. And then to follow it up with this past week, long story short, I don't even really want to spend a whole ton of time talking about what happened. However, it was pretty much a forgettable show. I don't really even know what to say except for Zahir Rahim was on it. And that was kind of the, you know, that was the highlight. And when Zahir Rahim is the highlight on your show, sorry, Mr. Rahim, that sucks. Yeah, that was the highlight. And I'm going to move on now because Friday Night Fight sucked. Anyway, so let's move on to what should probably be the biggest Canadian matchup in Canadian boxing history. Now, I say the biggest Canadian matchup because, excuse me, Lucien Bouté is Romanian, Jean Pascal is Haitian, if I'm not mistaken, but they're both transplants that have basically been accepted by the boxing public, which, you know, it seems kind of like a funky outlook to a lot of American fans, I think, especially because American fans get so caught up in whether or not somebody can speak English, whether or not somebody's going to be able to kind of get their message across to the fans, which I understand. However, you know, it's kind of cool, I would have to say, that the Canadian fans seem to have embraced two guys so much and so willingly that aren't from Canada, to a point where basically this is seen as an all-Canada matchup. And whether or not it's true, I guess we'll have to see how the ratings do, and I guess we'll have to see what the ticket sales are like, although it sounds like it's basically sold out and has been for a bit. But Jean Pascal is pretty much likening this fight to a Canadian Super Bowl or something along those lines. He called it a Canadian Floyd Mayweather versus Manny Pacquiao. So in other words, what he's saying is that this is a huge fight, and that's kind of what the numbers are pointing to as well. I actually did kind of have to do a little bit of research just because I was curious. When I saw the claims that this was going to be the biggest Canadian fight, well, naturally as the boring, ridiculous history guy, I got to thinking to myself, well, what really was the biggest Canadian fight? And I couldn't really find a huge fight aside from kind of regional stuff between two world-class guys that would be considered Canadian. What I did find, of course, was probably the biggest fight that ever happened in Montreal was Roberto Duran versus Ray Leonard 1, in which Duran basically confused and pissed off Ray Leonard to the point of, you know, taking a decision against him, which was a huge, huge fight and a huge result, needless to say, at the time. Both were extremely popular and also very great fighters, and the way that Roberto Duran was able to dismantle Ray Leonard that way was very impressive, and that's probably the biggest fight on Canadian soil, especially now that it's still remembered to this point, you know, almost 40 years later now. So I would have to say that's probably the biggest fight on Canadian soil, and past that, it's kind of tough to say. However, again, you kind of start creeping into the territory of fighters who, again, aren't Canadian. And so basically I came up with a fairly short list there. Archie Moore versus Yvon Durrell 1, in which Archie Moore was able to survive, I think it was 4 knockdowns, Durrell out in the 11th round. And I'm almost positive that fight's up on YouTube. So if you've never seen that fight, you should check it out because it was a pretty brutal affair. And that at the time was also a really huge fight in Canada because Yvon Durrell was seen as a bit of a superstar there at the time. And so, yeah, that was huge, especially for that fight of the year caliber fight happening on Canadian soil. But again, Archie Moore was not Canadian. I would have to say that in the last 20 to 30 years, probably the biggest superstars in Canada, or at least collectively, was probably the Hilton family. And so, if anybody wants to disagree or correct me, please do, because I'll be honest, I'm not totally up on my Canadian boxing history. But I would have to say that they certainly seemed to be big stars at the time. The problem was that, of course, they seemed to kind of get into trouble fairly often, especially with Davey Hilton. He wound up getting convicted of abusing his daughters, which is a bit of a, needless to say, a scandal. And it was a bit of a disgrace on their family, I'd have to say. And because of that, a lot of people seem to want to forget that the Hiltons pretty much even existed. But at the time, they were big draws in Canada. So aside from that, I mean, there's kind of been intermittent action going on in Canada. Lucien Bouté has been a big star and has been able to draw quite well at the Bell Center in the last, I'd say, maybe 8 to 10 years. I think that where it started kind of going south for him, though, or at least as far as his reputation, is that first Librado Andrade fight, Well, for the first, I would say, maybe 8 or 9 rounds, it seemed that Lucien Boutte was fairly easily outboxing Andrade, who was coming forward and kind of on the verge of doing something. However, you know, then it happened at the very end of the fight. Andrade came on, started landing punches, and then had Boutte, you know, on going back and then hurt, eventually badly hurt, knocking him down moments before the fight ended, and the knockdown seemed like a long count, and Boutte wound up winning. There seemed to be a lot of complaints about that at the time, which was kind of unfortunate because Boutte did survive, and he did kind of show a little bit of toughness there. But there seemed to be a lot of lingering doubt after that performance, and doubt that has lingered to this point, except for it seemed to have gotten worse after facing Carl Froch and getting knocked out by Carl Froch, Boutte, that is. So I think that the combination of that and on top of Jean Pascal just seeming to be kind of a more durable, better fighter, a lot of people seem to be leaning towards Jean Pascal, which I kind of agree with. It's also really tough to firmly pick Jean Pascal, though. He's been very inactive, and I think for the last, I want to say, 3 to 3.5 years, he has averaged one fight a year, if I'm not mistaken. And I looked yesterday, so my memory could be kind of fuzzy or whatever, but I'm pretty sure that he fought once in 2010, once in 2011, once in 2012, and once in 2013. I might be wrong about the first part. He might have fought twice in 2010. However, point is, he's got a pretty low per-year fight average in the last few years. And I think that it's just kind of in the middle of this trend. And I'll kind of take a little bit of a side note journey here. But there seems to be a big trend in boxing where the top fighters aren't really fighting more than, but, you know, if they fight more than 3 times a year, that's almost like automatic fighter of the year contention right there if they fight more than 3 times. That seemed to be a big reason why many people were pushing for Adonis Stevenson, who's, of course, another Canadian-based fighter, to be fighter of the year. It's also a big reason why many feel that Gennady Golovkin and Sergey Kovalev have taken such leaps and bounds in the last year and a half because they're fighting often. And I've talked about it before, but that is just kind of the state of boxing. And it seems just so funky and weird to me that just because a guy is essentially doing what he should be doing, that winds up being special. At the end of the day, these guys probably should be keeping active and fighting more often, even if only for the sake of staying in shape. It seems that about half of a fighter's training camp at this point is getting into shape, and I'd have to say that there's something wrong with that. Needless to say, that's kind of where Jean Pascal has found himself, although it seems to be as a result of injuries and some other kind of managerial type of issues. So it's not all that he doesn't want to fight or anything like that. There's a whole combination of factors, needless to say. But I think that that's detrimental for his career. And it's also tough to ascertain exactly where he is in his career physically because he's basically right in the middle of his prime. That was one of my huge complaints for when Floyd Mayweather took a little bit of a vacation a few years ago and, you know, quote-unquote retired. He was right in the middle of his prime, and it's frustrating to see a fighter, a very gifted fighter, you know, talented physical specimens, who just for basically no apparent reason take a whole lot of time off right in the middle of their prime. And it seems like a big waste to me, and that's unfortunate. So on top of that, going into this fight, taking that whole rant that I went on right there and going into this fight, I don't really know exactly where to think Jean Pascal is in his career. And on top of that, even when he was being slightly more active in terms of fighting more often, he still hasn't really been a very active fighter inside of the ring. And so that makes me a little bit concerned for his chances, although basically it comes down to, will Jean Pascal be able to land a big punch? It kind of seems likely that at some point he will. However, he doesn't throw a whole lot of punches. And Lucien Boutte, he can move a bit. He has some pretty good movement. He has some pretty decent legs as a fighter. he doesn't have huge punching power, and I think it kind of remains to be seen what he'll be able to do at light heavyweight. But it's so tough with two guys who are kind of almost unknown quantities despite being big names. It's tough to really pick that fight going in. Although, like I said earlier, I think that if you were going to be leaning towards Jean Pascal, I would probably agree with you in terms of Jean Pascal's power versus Lucien Boutet's chin or lack thereof. So that's kind of where I'm at with that fight. And it seems as though I'm kind of following the trend of the consensus there. I'd have to say that that's fair. But I am kind of curious as to what a lot of the Canadian fight fans are going with. I would imagine that if you're a fan of one guy in particular, you're probably leaning that way. I personally don't really have a horse in this race, so I don't really care who wins. But, yeah, leaning Pascal, I guess that's about the seventh time I've said that. So, anyway, moving on to the undercard of that. And like I said, I think I said it earlier anyway, it's probably going to be a fairly short show today because, yeah, it's just me. So I'm not going to spend the whole 2 hours talking to myself. And on top of that, I doubt anybody's going to seriously sit there for 2 hours listening to me talk. On the undercard of Jean Pascal versus Lucien Boutet, there, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, on HBO, going to be showing in the co-feature Eleider Alvarez versus Andrew Gardner. Now, Eleider Alvarez is also based in, I think, Quebec, Canada. He's Colombian, but he is kind of taken haven in Quebec, and then also Andrew Gardner, if I'm not mistaken, is from Manitoba. So that's kind of another little all-Canadian matchup to put on the undercard there, which I would have to say is probably pretty smart business. Although, with the main event being what it is, I'm not entirely sure it's going to have a huge effect. Well, yeah, it might just be overshadowed is all. However, it's not a bad idea to put another all-Canada matchup on that card. As far as Eleider Alvarez goes, I have seen him a handful of times. He's been featured a few times. If I'm not mistaken, he's also been on Friday Night Fights. But either way, I know that I've seen him. And he had a little bit of a weird fight against Edison Miranda in his last fight. And he has looked semi-impressive, in my opinion. Not particularly impressive, though. However, I don't really know anything about his opponent. So I kind of have to believe that Alvarez is probably being brought in to win. However, I guess we'll get a good look and see what exactly comes of that, although it seems like more of a showbox type of matchup to me. What I actually am more interested in seeing is heavyweight Mike Perez, the good old Irish Cuban. He's going to be making his comeback against Carlos Takam. I don't know that that's going to be shown at all on the broadcast. I would kind of hope that that would be the co-feature rather than Eleider Alvarez, but I really don't know. It's kind of tough to say sometimes unless the news or the promotional news coming out of these things is very specific. Sometimes it's tough to say who exactly is going to be headlining, who's going to be co-headlining, who's going to be cut from the televised card, et cetera, et cetera. But the point is that Mike Perez is making his first fight, or he's going to be in his first fight since the Magomed Abdusalamov fight, in which Abdusalamov, he's basically still in a coma, or at the very least the first stages of coming out of his coma, which on one hand is very good news, and it's really good to hear that he seems to be improving. However, it sure sounds like he has not really regained a whole lot of function as a person, which is horrible news. So I hope that he continues to improve and get better. However, that's not really what it's sounding like. Regardless, the discussion's more about Mike Perez for the moment, in that he's coming back in his first fight after seriously maiming a fighter. And I think that that's really going to be a pivotal moment for his career. He looked very, very promising against Abdusalamov, who really brought some heat in the first few rounds. Mike Perez kind of looked a little shaky to me in the first few rounds. He looked like he was getting hit a lot. He looked like maybe his defense wasn't quite as good as a lot of people thought. And then he started really dialing in with his punching power and his accuracy, which was really nice to see from a heavyweight. He looks like he's maybe a little bit too heavy, like he could still lose a little bit of weight, but that's kind of the case with just about every heavyweight these days. But he looks good. He looks pretty decent as a fighter. He was taking some really big shots against Abdusalamov, so he seems to have a good chin. But, you know, I think that the psychological factor of coming back after having seriously hurt a fighter, that's big. A lot of guys, at the very least reportedly, especially in the old days, came back after seriously hurting a fighter and didn't look to be the same. For example, Ezra Charles, after the Baroudi fight, a lot of folks said he didn't look the same or didn't quite fight the same. Ray Robinson, I mean, the list really goes on quite far. And so it's kind of tough to say exactly what he's going to be looking like when he comes. Is he going to be pulling the trigger when he needs to? Is he going to be kind of laying up? Is he going to be doing that thing against, like where Emmanuel Augustus was fighting, who was it, Ray Oliveira? And Ray Oliveira started blinking and looked kind of hurt during the fight, so Augustus started going to the body almost like mid-fight. He started feeling sorry for him. There are a lot of questions there. And so I think that if Mike Perez is able to come back and if he's able to approach the fight and not be afraid of hurting his opponent, he could be a force in the heavyweight division. However, it kind of opens up another discussion. Should we expect Mike Perez to come back after that fight really looking to hurt guys? And, I mean, I don't want to get overly philosophical here, but I do think that it really does cut to the heart of why we enjoy the sport. And, you know, it just raises some very interesting, I think it's just some very interesting questions and some very interesting discussion about it. After a guy comes back from nearly killing his opponent, is it ethically acceptable for us as fans to be expecting him to step back in with another fighter with essentially the same aim in mind? Stuff to think about. And I think that it's something that's tough for us to really step outside of our fandom and think about. And I think it's something we should think about, especially in light of, and I'm sorry that I'm kind of going on another little, you know, side rant here, but I think this is important. I think that it is very important in the wake of the last maybe third or quarter of 2013, where we saw a number of fighters either get hurt or almost get hurt or pass away, like Leal, like we were just talking about Magomed Abdusalamov. He's basically still clinging to consciousness in the sense of being a person. So seeing guys like Steve Smoger stepping in way late against James Kirkland in James Kirkland versus Glenn Tapia, you know, I think that we need to really start examining our bloodlust as fans and start kind of bringing more of a paradigm shift towards stopping fights earlier and being okay with it and stopping calling guys pussies and fags and stuff like that if they bow out of a fight because they're injured or if they're taking a shitload of punishment. This is something, in my opinion, that we should really start skewing away from. We need to start seeing these guys as human beings. We don't want them to get hurt. You know, this. Even if you want to look at it from a selfish perspective and not so much a moral or ethical perspective, the bottom line is if these serious injuries or if these just ridiculous transgressions keep happening in the sport, at the very least, they're going to take the sport away. I mean, I've talked so much about, you know, kind of lashing out against the people who say things like boxing is dead or boxing is dying. It's not fucking dead and it's not fucking dying. It never will be. It will never be completely dead. However, can happen and has already kind of started to happen is that boxing is being forced farther and farther away from the forefront or the consciousness of your average sports fan's mind. Yeah, they pay attention for Pacquiao and Mayweather fights. But there are a whole number, a host of factors that really turn a lot of fans off from boxing. And if things like serious injuries keep happening, you know, I can only imagine somebody gets very seriously injured or dies during a fight, and then we find out afterwards that a guy was on performance-enhancing drugs or something like that. That's really going to hurt the reputation of the sport if you want to take that kind of selfish perspective where you just like boxing and just want to watch boxing. Well, they're going to stop showing it on television if people are dying because of, you know, stupidity or ignorance or corruption, whatever you want to call it, or whatever it is. Anyway, so that's basically the only little kind of rant that I wanted to go on, but that we do need to start looking at this, I believe, and that I do think that it's pertinent to think about that before Mike Perez comes back and what we should be expecting to see from him. So I do think that'll be interesting, and it will be a moment in his career that I think maybe defines him as a person and as a fighter. Anyway, so now that I basically got all third level on everybody, I guess I did also want to take a couple minutes to talk about, I don't know, some quick news about Mayweather and Pacquiao's opponents, because why not? I don't know. It seems that the road keeps leading right to Mayweather versus Amir Khan. I get it. I do. It really seems as though the consensus of the folks who are supporting this fight are saying one of a few different things. They're saying that either one, Amir Khan is a popular guy in the UK, even if only in terms of popularity because people want to see him fucking knocked out, that is still popularity. Up until a few years ago, that was Floyd Mayweather's popularity. Before he really turned into a big pay-per-view star, that seemed to be a bulk of his popularity, or at least that's what it sounded like anyway. A lot of folks who were tuning in to see Floyd Mayweather get knocked out or get beaten or whatever, get his mouth shut, whatever you want to call it. But the more that I hear from UK fans, well, I guess to rebut that point, I guess, the more that I hear from UK fans, the more it sounds like perhaps Amir Khan really doesn't sell as well as advertised or as well as many folks over here in the U.S. think he does. Now, I don't mean to be dismissive of British boxing, not even 1 cent, because they sure know how to gather folks and put asses in seats for fights that they feel matter, even if they're only regional fights, and we just can't even do that in the U.S. So it's not to speak badly of the UK fight fans at all, because they're awesome fans. However, in terms of the bulk, in terms of the money, in terms of, you know, the ratings and whatnot, unfortunately, when people say things like ticket sales don't matter, unfortunately, that's kind of the case. Ticket sales don't really matter in the grand scheme of things. As I understand it, that's not really the big moneymaker when it comes to fights. The big moneymaker is ratings. You know, basically making money off of the fight being on TV. And when you compare those type of numbers in the UK to the numbers that we often get in larger fights in the US, they just don't compare, unfortunately. For example, like if they were showing a Floyd Mayweather pay-per-view in the UK, even if a ton of people bought it, the numbers just don't compare to the type of money that it generates in the United States. And that's the bottom line as far as the whole Khan can draw thing. It seems as though even if he could draw in the UK, in terms of money, that's not really bringing that much money. And it's already been proven that Khan does not draw fans from the UK over to the US for live fights. They've tried that a handful of times, and it hasn't worked. So that's kind of rebutting that point. Another point seems to be that, you know, it'll be a good fight for as long as it lasts. That might be true. I don't really have a real great counter-argument to that, except for to point out the as-long-as-it-lasts part. That's my problem with this fight, and that has always been my problem with this fight. Amir Khan has been shown to be increasingly fragile in terms of being able to absorb punishment and take punches. There's not really a whole lot more to it than that. Floyd Mayweather is one of the most accurate and hardest punching, when you put those two things together, in my opinion, I guess. But he might not score a lot of knockouts, but he hits you. He hits you when you're not realizing it, and it hurts. Even when he doesn't knock guys out, he frequently hurts them. Regardless, when you combine that, Floyd Mayweather's accuracy and the fact that he hits you pretty much exactly where he wants to hit you, when you combine that and Amir Khan's fragility, I think that you have a recipe for Floyd Mayweather probably stopping Amir Khan. And it seems as though pretty much everyone recognizes that. And even when they're recognizing that, they don't really care. They still want the fight to go on because, I don't know, maybe because it gets Floyd a high-profile easy win. I don't know. I can't think of any other reason, really. But that's a big problem with that fight to me, is that it seems to be a foregone conclusion. And even the folks who are supporting the fight seem to agree with that, but still want to see it. I guess, you know, if that's the perspective you're going to take, then there's not really much to argue against that. I disagree, but whatever. And then basically the last point to argue for that fight is that it's setting Floyd up for something bigger. That, oh, well, you know, he just had the Canelo fight, and on top of that, it doesn't matter because he'll be a favorite against anybody, and any fight with Floyd Mayweather is a foregone conclusion. That might be true, I guess. But I think that that also, a big chunk of that argument and a big chunk of my counter-argument, I guess you could say, is that it kind of goes back to what I was saying about activity. If Floyd Mayweather were fighting more than once every 6 to 9 months, I think that it would be safer to say that there would be more guys who can beat him. And I know that might not make sense, so let me kind of clarify a little bit. What I mean is that if Floyd Mayweather is fighting about once a year, once every 9 months, roughly, that schedule in itself severely limits the type of opponents that Floyd Mayweather can get in the ring with, which is exactly logically opposite of what you would think, because Floyd Mayweather draws so much money and basically is such a pay-per-view attraction that it would seem as though he could get any opponent. And, I mean, in reality, he really could if he wanted to. But I think that that's also what enters the equation, whether or not he wants to. I think that he's comfortable fighting once every 6 to 9 months. Like I said, that limits who's going to be able to fight against him, especially with the contract he has now with Showtime. On one hand, Showtime and CBS make a shitload of money. And so Floyd Mayweather's contract to them is actually fairly small peanuts in the grand scheme of money making between CBS and Showtime. However, that doesn't mean that Showtime doesn't want to be profitable with this deal. That doesn't mean that Showtime is just going to be able to accept any opponent or whatever. And I think that that also factored into why Floyd Mayweather was moving to face Canelo Alvarez when he did. The Guerrero pay-per-view didn't seem to do well. I mean, does anybody even know the numbers from it at this point? I don't know. I never really saw them, and it seemed like they were never released because they were probably bad. That said, I think that Showtime probably stepped in and said, all right, well, that didn't do so well. We probably made a profit, but it didn't really do as great as we thought it would. So let's up the ante and have you face somebody who's going to bring in some bucks just to make sure. That seems to be the case. Now, moving forward, Floyd's first fight is going to be, 8 months later? 8 months after the Canelo fight. So one, they're not really capitalizing on the popularity of that fight. And two, again, it limits the type of opponents they could have because they need a bigger opponent to try to put up numbers that are comparable to the Canelo fight. Or else, why do it? It kind of leaves only a few options. And I think that Khan is probably at the head of the pack, which, in my opinion, sucks. So that was a long-winded way of me saying I don't really want to see that fight. And that's pretty much how it goes. My mind is probably not going to be changed about that. I still think that Amir Khan is probably going to get knocked out, and probably brutally. Yeah, in the first few rounds he might, you know, look quick or whatever, but I highly doubt anything past that is going to happen. Whatever. That's it. Also, I think it was this morning. It might have been last night. Sorry, have to stop and take a drink at some point. It might have been last night, although I kind of fell off as far as the news went. It was announced by, I think it was on Boxing Scene, Bob Arum had said that Robert Guerrero and Uriorkis Gamboa were not in the running to be Manny Pacquiao's opponents. And to that, I say praise the Jeebus, because I don't really want to see either of those guys in against either Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao. I don't even really know why Uriorkis Gamboa would be in the running at all. For whatever reason, there were rumors going around in the last few days that those guys were both viable opponents for Manny Pacquiao. Why? I mean, does anybody really ever know why? No, nobody knows. So I think that where the rumors stem from, I don't even know with Gamboa. I don't know where that came from. That's out of left field, I guess, because 50 Cent is cool with Bob Arum now, and they're chilling at the pool and shit all the time, but whatever. I think that that's where that came from. However, as far as Guerrero goes, I think that that's because supposedly he wants to get out of his contract with Golden Boy. That's another why. Why, I don't know. They just got him the Floyd Mayweather fight, which was easily his biggest payday and will probably be his biggest payday before he retires. So, yeah, that's probably why that was even in the running. Like, he was trying to pull away from Golden Boy and get signed with Top Rank so that he can get a Manny Pacquiao fight. He's been talking about getting a Manny Pacquiao fight since he was a featherweight, and Manny had just been a featherweight. So this has been going on a long time since Robert Guerrero was a prospect, just like he had been calling out Floyd Mayweather for a long time, except I'd have to say that after seeing Robert Guerrero in with Floyd Mayweather, yeah, sorry, Mr. Guerrero, but I think that you're probably not going to be able to sell that fight really anymore. Everybody saw you pretty much shit the bed against Floyd Mayweather, and I don't really think anybody wants to pay to tune in, you know, for you doing that against Manny Pacquiao. We're good. Thanks. So I'm glad to see that neither of those guys seem to be in the running. It seems to be between Provodnikov and Bradley, and I've said before, I prefer Tim Bradley of those two, even though Ruslan Provodnikov might be able to bring some shit, because he probably is against anybody. Actually, and I just got a tweet from JC saying he's on the line. Fine, I'm going to patch you in. What's up, JC?
Hey, what's happening, bro?
How you doing, man?
You hear me? I'm doing good.
I can.
Man.
What'd you want to call in and talk about?
I wanted to chime in on this this Floyd garbage you've been talking about, and this Robert Guerrero thing just made me laugh, though, about shitting on his bed when he fought Floyd. Oh, hey, look, man. what entitles him to even think that he deserves to get a fight with Pac-Man anyway, is my question.
That's a good question.
I mean,
I have absolutely no idea.
He shows shit against Floyd, for real, and now and he takes like a year off. He takes longer to fight than Mayweather, dude.
Yeah, and that's a really big problem. I mean, I was wondering whether or not it had to do with his legal issues, or if there still was a legal issue from the gun thing. I have absolutely no idea. But yeah, when was the Floyd fight? Was what, in May? We're already in January. So where the hell has he been?
Yeah, I don't want to really see anything with that guy. There's too much stuff going on with the 140, 147 without him. I mean, the guy, you know, he can fall off the edge, dude, if he wants, like, careless. But, hey, Matt, I got a question about, it's probably off the subject now with the Mayweather, but what do you think about the Chavez? Do you think Chavez Jr. is going to make weight against Vera? I think the last, man. I think he's going to go over, dude.
I think that that's probably a pretty, if you were a betting man, that would probably be a pretty good bet. And if I were a bookie, I would probably place a line on that. Seriously.
On the over,
like,
right? I think
you know,
I'm going over. I'll put money on the over. I don't think this guy is going to make that. I think that's why they set that 250 grand to, for Vera will get if he doesn't make weight. That ain't shit, man, to Chavez Jr., 250 grand?
Nah. Well, it sounds like he makes quite a bit of money down in Mexico for, like, Mexican
saying.
TV.
That's exactly
so
what I'm saying,
grand, yeah. Probably
the guy works
shit
for
him.
Freaking, he's part of a cartel or whatever the hell he's doing. And so you think 250 grand, I think it's all set. He's going to come in at about 170-something for sure.
Probably. And probably do it with a smile on his face, too.
yeah, you give a shit, man. I'm not interested in that guy. I think he's a joke, but, I mean, he does bring, I mean, his fights are watchable just because of his style, but, I mean, just I just think he's a farce.
Well, I mean, earlier I was talking about Mike Perez coming back, you know, into the ring this weekend and it being a pivotal point in his career. And again, I don't want to get, you know, all crazy and like psychological about it or whatever, but this might be a pivotal point in Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.'s career if he's able to make weight and take himself seriously as a fighter. You know, maybe he can't make middleweight anymore. I don't know. It seemed to me like it wasn't that long ago that he was a welterweight and then a 154-pounder. So I don't know exactly how he ate himself away from middleweight so quickly, but maybe he really can't make it anymore. And I'm cool with that. I can accept that. However, if he comes in and he can't make super middleweight, this is going to be bad.
Yeah.
And I don't know that anybody's going to really want to be taking a lot of risks on him as an opponent or whatever. I mean, how the fuck do you know whether or not he's going to make weight or is he going to show up?
Exactly.
So I think that's going to be big.
I agree, man. Well, anyway, dude, well, keep doing your thing. I'm listening.
Thanks, man. Thanks for calling in,
bro. All right,
buddy.
Later.
Oh, JC, thank you for calling in. That was pretty funny. And that was actually a first for Queensbury Rules Radio. Never really had anybody, you know, any guests or anything like that. Well, you know, aside from a scheduled guest, call in and talk to us. So, yay. Good stuff. All because Foley ain't here. That son of a bitch. Now, in all seriousness, Foley texted me this morning, and he said something about his furnace going out, and he lives in Chicago. So, yeah, I'd have to say that's probably something he should be fucking taking care of, because it's about negative holy fuck degrees in Chicago compared to where I am in San Diego. I look outside, sun's shining, it's like 75 degrees. I have no complaints. So if it were that cold and my furnace broke, I'd be on that shit too. So God bless you, Foley. Good luck with that shit. Anyway, let's see. There were a couple other things that I wanted to talk about, at least one more thing anyway. I'm surprised I was able to take the show as far as I have. At the, like, 10-minute mark, I said, holy shit, I've already gone through all my material. What the fuck am I going to do? Oh, impressing myself day by day. One of the things that I did want to talk about was that actually I had read – well, it's kind of been a developing thing over the last maybe week to week and a half that Adrian Broner has a rematch clause in his contract to rematch Marcos Maidana. And so there's kind of been a little bit of a row over that. I think the – all right, well, I'll put it this way. I was happy to see – Marcos Maidana kicked the crap out of Adrian Broner, as were, it sure seemed that just about everybody was. Just about everybody, short of being a really big Adrian Broner fan, were happy to see that, because if nothing else, that was like karma coming up and jump kicking the shit out of Adrian Broner. It was awesome. It was awesome to see a guy acting like such a douchebag get comeuppance. It was like watching an 80s movie where the dude was the bully the entire time. It was like watching Johnny in Karate Kid finally getting crane kicked in the chin at the end of the movie. It was kind of cool. That said, coming out of the fight, it sure seemed as though there was a large chunk of folks saying things like, well, I'm really happy and I'm really proud of Adrian Broner because he was really tough and he's got a lot of resolve and, you know, I'm proud of him, I'm happy for him, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I seem to be kind of part of a maybe smaller group saying, fuck that, because he did a lot of fouling. Well, he did pretty much constant fouling. You know, I'm sorry to be all negative Nancy about that shit, but, yeah, he basically did constant fouling, constant elbowing, forearming, headbutting, wrestling around in the clinches. And then on top of that, when basically Maidana got fed up with it, and tried to break away from a clinch in which Adrian Broner seemed kind of shaken up or rattled. He tried to break away. He wrongly headbutted or separated himself with his head, whatever you want to call it. It wasn't really much of a headbutt. Regardless, Adrian Broner fell like he fucking got shot in the face. And things like that, all of these fouls and then like acting, trying to buy a DQ from a referee, I can't get behind that. I can't say that I want to reward that. And I don't know why anyone would want to reward that. I think that that's pretty lame. So that said, I would have to say that if the question comes down to whether or not Adrian Broner deserves, quote-unquote deserves, a rematch with Marcos Maidana, I almost feel like it should be up to Maidana. I mean, maybe that's not fair. Maybe that's not in, you know, withholding or holding up the rules with the rules in boxing that, you know, or even just the gentlemanly rules, you know. Broner gave him a shot, so he should give him a shot back. When you fight like that, I kind of feel as though you kind of lose your rights. It's like a guy going to prison for something really heinous. At that point, I kind of stop thinking about these guys as humans. I kind of stop worrying about their civil rights. I know that might be a, kind of an extreme analogy, but yeah, I think that it's pertinent, though. I don't really know that Adrian Broner deserves a rematch after a performance like that. However, it sounds like that's probably what's going to happen. And if it's between Marcos Maidana fighting Floyd Mayweather and Marcos Maidana rematching Adrian Broner, to be totally honest, I kind of lean towards the rematch with Broner. And that's not because I don't want to see Marcos Maidana. You know, it's not because I don't want to see him get rewarded against Floyd Mayweather, because I would like to see that, and I do think that he deserves a big payday in that way. However, I don't really see Marcos Maidana winning that fight, and I kind of don't really want to see him lose or get beat down or whatever the case may be against Floyd Mayweather coming off a big win like that. I think that that's not really capitalizing well on that win. Regardless, if he did get a Floyd Mayweather fight, I would understand. So, and on top of that, if nothing else, I guess Adrian Broner, there's a real good chance he would get his ass kicked again, and Lord knows I'm all for that. So that kind of seems to be what they're leaning towards, but I do think that there is a relevant discussion as to whether or not Adrian Broner should get that fight. But, you know, seems to be kind of a mixed response on Twitter for me to say that. I think that was pretty much it as far as all the stuff that's in the news that I wanted to talk about, because there wasn't really a whole lot. It's basically the Jean Pascal versus Boutte fight this weekend, and then it kind of dies down a little bit. There's some potentially decent smaller shows, and then some more HBO stuff. In any event, I want to thank everybody who tuned in today, and especially JC for calling in. That was cool stuff. And thanks again. Sorry that Foley couldn't make it, and sorry that it's a short show, but it's just me. And I have no joke setups. I have no, Foley pretty much makes all the jokes. But I have no joke setups. I have no guy to push me along here. So we'll be back next week. Hopefully Foley will have his furnace fixed by then. And we'll see everybody next week. Thanks again for tuning in. And, and of course, my little sign-off that I can't forget, check out Foley's stuff on badlefthook.com and my stuff on queensburyrules.com. Thank you very much. Take it easy.